Let us enjoy breathing together and become aware of the sun shining. The sun is a Buddha, because Buddha is not only a person. The Buddha can be a mountain, a river, or a star. There is a Buddha whose name is Amitabha, a well-known Buddha by his name, meaning infinite light and infinite longevity. And when we look at the sun, we know that it is a Buddha, because it's shining infinite light. The sun, as a Buddha, is offering light in the 10 directions. And without the light, no life is possible on this planet. So the sun is a true Buddha. If you want to see the Buddha, just look up. You don't have to go to another direction to see the Buddha. Many people believe that Amitabha has his home in the direction of the west. The sun also goes to the west in order to spend the night. But in fact, the Buddha's sun is shining day and night and offers us light and heat and life. We are all daughters and sons of that Buddha. And that Buddha is not only in the sky, he is in us. We cannot remove him from our body. If we do, we'll be no longer there. So Buddha is outside, Buddha is inside. Breathing in, I know that Amitabha Buddha is up there and in myself. Breathing out, I smile to the Buddha, Amitabha. Good morning, dear Sangha. Today is Sunday, October the 9th, in the year 2011. And we are on our fifth day of the retreat, stepping into freedom, savoring life. Today we have a session of questions and answers. And the children will have the chance to ask their question first. And after that, teenagers, young adults and adults. And everyone who has a question, is invited to come up here and sit next to Thầy, around Thầy. And they will take their turn to sit on that chair so that everyone can see them. Before we ask a question, we listen to the bell and we breathe together as a Sangha 3 times. And a good question can benefit many people. Therefore, you have to ask the true question of the heart, a question that has to do with our suffering, happiness, and practice. From time to time, we will read one question in the written form. So please come and sit close to Thầy if you have a question to ask. Children, adults, teenagers are invited to come now. Now is the time. In Plum Village, especially in the summer opening, there's so many people from many countries coming to practice with us. About 50 or more countries. And they ask questions in Italian, Spanish, and Chinese. And sometimes they have to bring their own translator. But now, here, we don't have to do that. Everyone speaks English. Very convenient. So let us sit beautifully and enjoy breathing together as a body before we ask the first question.
When you get so upset, you just want to hit. How do you control it?
Dear Thầy, dear community, our friend asked, what do you do when you get so upset, you just want to hit? How do you control that?
Good question. All of us get upset from time to time. And sometimes there is violence in us, we want to hit. Because there's anger, irritation, violence in us. And if we do, and then you create chaos. You cause suffering to us and to the environment, to other people. That is why we need the practice. That is why you have to come to a retreat and learn how to be peace, to be peaceful, and not to suffer when we feel upset and we feel angry and we want to hit. Everyone has to learn that. You are upset because you do not have enough peace in you. You have confusion in you. You don't have peace. And you have anger, violence, you want to hit. And as a good practitioner, we know to be in control. We don't want that kind of confusion and violence to take over us. And we can practice breathing in, breathing out, deeply in that moment. And during the time of breathing in, we just pay attention to our breathing in. Breathing in, I'm really breathing in. Breathing out, I am really breathing out. And if you breathe like this, like that a few times, you come down. And you know that hitting or saying something strong will cause you to suffer more and make the other person suffer. So breathing in and out, and just think of your breathing in, breathing out. Don't think of anything else. Will surely help you to be less upset and help the violence in us to subside. In us there are many good things like love, gentleness, joy. We should allow these things to come up more than anger, violence. So breathing in and out is a way to say that, dear violence, dear anger, I know you are there. Don't do anything. Allow your friends, love, joy, understanding to come up. And that is the miracle of the practice of mindful breathing. So all of us, no matter how old we are, we should learn breathing. Breathing can calm down our anger, transform our violence. And after having breathed in and out a few times, you may be able to smile. And when you smile, it means you have won a victory. You have won a victory over your anger, your violence. And the victory is not only for you, but for the person you want to hit. You win for both of you. That's what the Buddha said. We have to win for both. Not only for ourselves, but for the other person. Victory for both, that is our practice. And that can be done with deep mindful breathing. Remember. Thank you for asking the question. It helps us adult also.
Do you ever get frustrated with yourself?
Do you tell your community, our friend asked, do you ever put pressure on yourself? Or do you ever feel frustrated with yourself?
Frustrated.
Frustration is something that exists in every one of us. When things do not go as you wish, you feel frustrated. But as a good practitioner, you don't allow frustration to take over you and dominate you for a long time. With the practice of mindful breathing, you can recognize your frustration. Hello, I know you, my frustration. But we don't need to be frustrated because there are many good things around and inside. It's like you go to a beautiful garden. Even there is one or two trees that are not growing very well, and one may be dying. But we know that the rest of the garden is still very beautiful. Many beautiful trees are there. So even if one or two trees are not beautiful enough, you don't get frustrated. You tell yourself that, well, you may replace that tree by planting another tree. So you don't allow frustration to take over. So first you say hello to your frustration. Hello there, my frustration. I don't think that we need to suffer, because there are many good things around we can still enjoy. I will take care. So again, the practice of mindful breathing can help meet our frustration and help our frustration to transform. Thank you.
Tali, when I want to be in the here and the now, how can I not suffer when people are not being good to this world?
That is true, that when you go home to the here and the now, you see many beautiful things, many beautiful people, but you can see things that are not so beautiful. People who are not so kind. So the answer is a little bit similar to the answer to the other question. There are bad people, but there are good people. There are nice people, there are mean people. There are positive things and there are negative things. But life is like that. There is the mud, there is the lotus. And without the mud, no lotus can grow. That is why suffering, the suffering which is there, is something normal. And the problem is not suffering should be there or should not be there, but how to not be drowned into suffering, how to skillfully make good use of suffering in order to create happiness. So the people who are doing harm to the world, they are killing, they are destroying. If we look deeply, we see that maybe they don't want to kill, to destroy. They do not have the joy to kill and to destroy. But because there is a lot of suffering, anger in them, that they cannot help. They cannot handle the suffering and the anger in them. And that is why they are pushed to do what they may not like to do. And all of us do that from time to time. We know that it's a bad thing to do, but we still go ahead and do it and regret later. So we have to understand they are in the same situation. They may not be willing to do it, but because there is so much anger and hate and violence in them, that they cannot resist doing that. So the problem is not to punish them, but how to help them. Help them transform the anger and the suffering in them. It must be different ways to help. If we use a gun, we shoot them. We don't help them. If we lock them into prison and punish them, we may not help them, because these are means of punishment. But people who are in charge of prisons, if they are good practitioners, they don't look at people as a form of punition, but they use the facilities of correction houses in order to help the people, the inmates, to practice and to transform. And if guardians of prisons, they know the practice of mindful breathing and transform the anger, they might be able to help the prisoners, the inmates, the prisoners, to do the same. So sometimes you have to lock people up so that they will not continue to destroy and to kill, but to lock them up out of compassion and not out of anger. That is possible. And when we have locked them up, we will tell them that we are forced to do so. But we want them to come to collaborate with us, practicing mindful breathing, calming the anger, seeing things fully, developing compassion, and you will get out of prison very soon if you practice. So in prisons, if the administration of prisons know that practice, they will help transform the inmates of prisons and help them to get out of the prison sooner. So there are many people who are doing, who are causing a lot of suffering to the world. Instead of getting angry at them, we can allow compassion, understanding to arise in us, and we make the vow to find way to help them so that they can transform the anger and the violence in them so that they will not continue the work of making others suffer. So if you have that kind of desire in you to help people, you are a truly bodhisattva, a Buddha, even if you are still very young. We have many young bodhisattvas in the world. This is
old were you when you decided to become a monk? And what are some of the big commitments you have to make if you want to become a monk?
Dear Tai, dear community, our friend wants to know how old was Tai when Tai decided to become a monk? And what are some of the big commitments you have to make if you want to become a monk?
When I was a little boy, about 9 or 10, I already wanted to become a monk. I saw the picture of the Buddha on a Buddhist magazine. He was sitting on the grass, very peaceful, very happy, and I wanted to be like him. So I was told that if you want to become a Buddha, maybe the easiest way is to practice as a monk. And that dream did not come true until I was 16. I was allowed by my father, my mother, to ordain as a novice monk. And you have to spend many months in the temple and learning to chant, to sit, to breathe, to work, to carry the water. There's no running water at that time. There's no electricity at that time in my temple. And I enjoyed very much the time I was a novice. I had many novice brothers, and we had a lot of fun together. And the book they gave us to study and train as novice has a very beautiful name. Stepping into Freedom. That's the title of the book. The 10 precepts and mindfulness trainings of a novice. And each precept, if you practice, give you a kind of freedom. So if you practice 10 precepts of a novice, you have 10 kinds of freedom. It is the practice of the precepts that allow you to have freedom. Suppose you practice the precept on not drinking alcohol, using drugs. When you are addicted to drugs and alcohol, you lose your freedom. You see? You don't have freedom anymore. You are under the rule, the domination of drugs and alcohol. But if you practice that precept, not using alcohol and drug, you are free. And if you are not free, not only you are addicted to drugs and alcohol, but you may be pushed to steal in order to have the money to buy drugs. So you lose without one freedom, you lose another freedom. So keeping the precept not stealing can give you another kind of freedom. Because stealing, you can got into prison. Killing can put you in prison. So that is why the precepts, the mindfulness trainings, are to guarantee your freedom. And that is why stepping to freedom is the practice of mindfulness trainings. Many friends are going to commit themselves to the practice of 5 mindfulness trainings tomorrow, and they will have a lot of freedom practicing the 5 precepts. And as a novice, you practice 10 precepts. And after 3 years, if you do well, and then you allow to receive full ordination as a bhikshu or a bhikshuni, and you know that monks and nuns, although they live simply, but they have a lot of time in order to practice and to serve other people. And we now have a program for the young people, 5-year monastic training and service. You can live as a monk or a nun during 5 years. And during that time, you practice, you train as a monk or a nun, and you help organizing retreat, and you help people to transform. And after 5 years of being a monk or a nun, you might become a lay person again, or you might continue as a monk or a nun if you wish. In the world, there is military service, and this is something much more pleasant to do. Spiritual service. In 5 years, you can learn a lot, and you can help people. Thầy has many young students as monks and nuns. And one student of Thầy, she has only practiced as a novice for 2 years. But she is already able to help so many people. In the retreat in Mississippi, she conduct a discussion group, and she even proposed Dhamma names for those who are going to take the 5 mindfulness trainings. And they approved the proposal before they gave it to aspirants of the 5 mindfulness trainings. And 2 years of training as a monk or a nun, you can already serve and help people. And that's why young people should think about it. And there are many young Dhamma teachers in our midst, monks and nuns, and they have begun at the age of 12, at 13. Sooner than Thầy, Thầy began at the age of 16. See? I think that that's enough for the children. They would like to go out and continue and leave the time for other people to ask their questions. Thank you for your 4 questions. They are all very good questions that help us very much. The young people, the children, stand up and bow and go out. Have a good day. Enjoy the Buddha. Brother Fablu, can you come and in 5 minutes share with us about the wake-up movement before we continue with the questions? Brother Stream is there.
Satya Thai Dear Sangha. I share a little bit about to continue what Thay is sharing about the 5-year monastic service program. We have a movement of young people to practice mindfulness in their daily lives and to bring it into the lives of their friends, their family, in a way that it's they make it their own. And it's called Wake Up, and it's proposed by Thay about 3 years ago in Plum Village. So it's a movement that is kind of started in Europe. There are many young people in France, in Belgium, Netherlands, and England who have been organizing groups, in Germany as well, organizing groups of practice on their own with friends in their local towns. So it's like a sangha, but it's young people really geared towards 17 to 35 year olds. And they've been coming to Plum Village for retreats. It started out as a movement called Young Buddhists for a Healthy and Compassionate Society. And we some of the brothers and sisters created a shortened version called Wake Up. It's a little bit easier to say. And it was also changed to be Young Buddhists and Non-Buddhists for a Healthy and Compassionate Society as a longer name. And now the movement has been spreading. We've had Wake Up groups in Southeast Asia, and Thai's trips to Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and now it's starting to grow much stronger here in the U.S., especially during this tour. We've been sharing a lot about Wake Up. We've had retreats every year in Plum Village, and I think there have been retreats here in Blue Cliff as well as in Deer Park Monastery. Now we're actually doing Wake Up tours, and I'll share a little bit about that. We did a tour, about 7 brothers and sisters, organized by Brother Phap Lin and Sister Hienim from the UK monastic sangha. And we went for about 2 weeks to the UK to share at university. We were invited to go to a bunch of universities, the School of Oriental and African Studies in Cambridge, and Oxford, Leeds, and a bunch of other places. And we actually used the space at the colleges to do days of mindfulness, to have evenings of mindfulness, panel discussion, total relaxation, walking meditation right on the campus. And we made it free and available for everyone, for all the students and young people to come. We tried to focus it. Wake Up is really a movement focused on younger people, so we also asked the support of the older sanghas, because they were quite excited that a bunch of monastics are going around, and they also wanted to participate. And so it was very lovely. They learned very quickly that they could support by giving us a place to sleep, for example, and also financially they supported us in providing cushions from the local sangha, or even providing meals for the monastics. And we had some lay friends coming with us too, young lay friends. But then when the event took place, they were able to step back and kind of let the young people have the space, because they hadn't been, it was the first time for many of them, and it was important to have that young space where they could feel like they're being listened to and they could share. So it was very lovely. So there's a kind of synergy between the older sangha and the younger sangha. The younger sangha takes the lead and they can do what they want to do, but they have the moral and the financial support of the elders. Yeah. So it's very lovely. And this is what we would like to do, and we are doing in the U.S. Starting October 20th in Boston. We're doing a wake-up tour here in the U.S. So it started with an invitation. A young girl who's going to Yale invited us last spring to come to Yale, and then another young friend from Harvard invited us to go there. And so it's kind of happened organically like that. Just wherever we've been invited, we've tried to make it possible. So now we're going all around. People a little bit, that they say, why are you going to all these elite colleges? Well, we said, well, that's the ones who invited us. I don't know, please invite us to come if you know. So we're going to Harvard and MIT and Dartmouth. Then down with Thay to Washington, we go to Georgetown University to share our day of mindfulness. Then up to the University of Pennsylvania, to Brown University in Providence, and then Yale, and then we go to New York City One friend has a hotel in, right in the center of Manhattan, and she offered to let us use that, have to stay and to have a day of mindfulness. It's called the Gershwin Hotel in Manhattan, and we'll go to Iona College, Lehman College in the Bronx, I think, and then Columbia. And we're very happy to have your support in any way that you can. It's really a beautiful thing to see young people connecting with the practice at that age. One friend in my group yesterday said that this is the age where we learn to crash and burn. And we laugh a little bit, but it's also, we've in some ways created a society where that's the only way people learn about suffering, because they don't have another chance to get these kind of tools to help them out of their depression, out of their strong emotion. And Wake Up is there to provide those tools to young people. So if you have a way to support, feel free. I will be in the back at the end of the Dhamma talk. You can come near the sound room. You can come in. And also, mainly we want to get the word out to young people, 18 to 35, to come to these events. There's a website. It's us. So us.wkup.org. So WKUP is short for Wake Up. .org, that's the website for Wake Up. And yeah, I don't know, we don't have a board. Well, the board's behind it. Yeah, if you don't mind. I can write it on the board and that way you can note it down, but it's us.wkup.org. And so you can go on there, there's a place you can donate. We're also, if you have an extra minivan or car, we're looking for ways to transport. We have about 17 people, about 11 monastics and 6 or 7 lay people, and we're going to rent vans. But if you have, we'd ask if somebody has a. Something I know in the Northeast. I grew up here. And somebody has a minivan sitting in their thing in their driveway, and they don't use it for 3 weeks. We take very good care of it. We'll wash it and turn it around. We need about 2 minivans to kind of do this driving tour around. And if you have any way of knowing especially young people in the area, so look at the schedule on the board, and I mean sorry on the website, and see if you can get young people to come to these events. We're already starting to get a lot of people to come, and we'll announce further things also on Tai's Facebook page. If you don't know, Tai has a Facebook page. Has 370,000 fans, and we often announce things there about Wake Up, so you can keep in touch there. So if you have anything you'd like to share with me or any of the other monastics in Wake Up, please, we'll be right at the back by the entrance to the sound room after the Dhamma talk. So thank you so much for your patience and listening. Yeah.
Good morning, dear Sangha. This doesn't have to do with Wake Up, but it can. Our neighbor, for those of you who parked down at the hill right here, our neighbor is pretty upset and she's giving us 45 minutes to move our cars. So if you've parked on the hill going down towards the bridge, please move your car. Thank you.
Positive and negative energy, what am I supposed to do with that energy? Like, it's there, but what should I do with it?
Dita, in your community, our friend asked, when I have positive and negative energy, it means very strong energy, right? Strong positive energy. Or strong negative energy, What am I supposed to do with it? It means to find a peaceful place.
So you have learned already that when there is a painful feeling or emotion coming up, you should be able to breathe and recognize it and embrace it. The practice should be the same when other kind of energy coming up. Maybe some excitement. When you get too excited, you might lose some of your peace. So you do very much the same thing. And the practice of mindful breathing is so wonderful. It helps us to be ourselves. It brings about the energy of mindfulness and concentration. And it is with that energy that we can recognize and handle the other kind of energy. A feeling or whatever, an emotion or whatever. And first of all, we just recognize and hold it. And we can maintain peace, maintain ourselves. And if we continue, we will be more concentrated, and we may have a chance to look deeply into its nature and see where it has come from. And with understanding of the nature of what is there, we will be in complete control of the situation.
Dear community, our friend is asking, for example, when we practice noble silence and also other times, what does it really mean to go home to yourself? Is that right?
To go home to yourself, first of all, means you bring your mind back to your body. And you feel that you are truly there. You are not being pulled by either the past or the future or your projects, your thinking, because thinking might cause us to lose ourselves. So the practice of mindful breathing can unify body and mind, and we can find ourselves established in the here and the now. And the practice of mindful breathing can stabilize the situation. It helps us to calm down, to be truly there and to be aware of what is going on. We are not lost by what is happening. We are still ourselves. And it's like a house with several windows and doors. And if we open all the windows and doors in a time there is strong winds, well, the wind will come in and blow everything away. So going home is like shutting the window, shutting the door, so that the wind will not penetrate. And the eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, there are windows. And we shut these windows. We don't look anymore, we don't listen anymore, we don't think anymore. We just follow our in-breath, our breath, and we are comfortable in the house. And you might like to make a fire in the chimney to warm it up. And you feel comfortable within. And that is what we should do every time we feel lost. We feel that we are no longer ourselves. We are being blown away by events. That is what the Buddha called going home to the island within. Close the six windows and stay inside with your breathing. And you will be calm, you will see more clearly. And when you feel safe, you clear, and you may like to open one window to see what is going on. This should be a practice taken by everyone when they don't feel like they are themselves. They're losing themselves in the situation, in the environment. And closing the six sense doors is a practice. And when you focus your attention on your in-breath and out-breath, and just pay attention to just that, and then the six doors will be closed by themselves. And we are warm inside. And the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha are with us inside. The Dharma is your mindfulness generated by mindful breathing. It can show you, it will bring you the light. And the Dharma is your breathing in mindfulness. This is a real Dharma, this true Dharma. And you are protected by the Buddha, which is mindfulness. You are protected by the Dharma, which is your mindful breathing. And then the Buddha and the Dharma, when the Buddha and the Dharma is there, your five skandhas, which is the body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, it is like a Sangha, and you operate in harmony. The Sangha is inside. So if you are, you take refuge in the three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you are safe, you are in peace. And to pronounce the sentence, I take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, in the Sangha, it's not the same. You might pronounce that, but you don't do it. Now you don't have to pronounce that sentence, you just follow your in-breath. And breathe in and out mindfully. And then the Buddha, the Dharma and Sangha just manifest in you as the refuge, and you are safe. And Thay practice that. In difficult moments, in disturbing situation, Thay always practice that. Mindful breathing and go home to himself. And get the protection of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Anywhere you can do that. when there is fear, anger, confusion, despair, we should take refuge in the three jewels just by the practice of mindful breathing. And you see the effect if you practice with all your heart.
Some of us have a hard time hearing, so I'm going to hope this can record the sound. Is that okay? Happy continuation day. I'm suffering with not knowing that after, this is concerning continuation and consciousness after continuation. I'm suffering with not knowing that my communication with my late wife is not just in my imagination. I know that after we continue, we're all conscious, we're all one, we're all love. But I wonder if I can know that we can still have the consciousness of our loved ones with us. After your big continuation, can we know that you really can hear us, you really are with us, and my late wife and others?
Dear Thay, dear community, our friend is asking about communication with people who have passed away, who have transformed into another form. And our friend is asking, he says that he suffers because he's not sure that his communication with his late wife is real and not just something in his own imagination. And so he's asking, can we really be in contact with the consciousness of the ones we love after they change form?
This question allowed us to see the miracle of meditation, because to meditate we can really have an answer to questions like this one. Suppose you look into the family album and you see yourself as a 5-year-old boy. And you ask, where is the boy now? Has he died or not? And that is meditation. You know that the 5-year-old boy has not died. He has transformed so much. And now you are the continuation of him, the 5-year-old boy. Can you talk to the 5-year-old boy in you? The 5-year-old boy is just the invention of your mind, a reality. If you can talk to the 5-year-old boy in you, who was you and then you can talk to your wife also, provided that you are not caught by the sign, by the form you used to see him or her. It's like if you are caught in the sight of the cloud, and when you look at the tree, you don't see the cloud anymore. But if you practice signlessness, free from signs, and then you can still see the cloud in the tea. And the cloud in the tea is not an invention of my mind. It is reality itself. So your wife is in her new manifestation now. And don't think that she is only outside of you. Or she may be in you, and you can talk to her deeply and very real. I can talk to my mom, I can talk to my dad, I can talk to my teacher, and I feel them very, very real. I know that my hand has the hand of my mom in it. So when I touch my right hand with my left hand, not only I touch my hand, but I touch her hand. And when I touch my forehead with my hand, well, the hand of my mother is touching my forehead at the same time. It's very real. It's not imagination. It's not a product of the mind. So nothing is lost. The cloud cannot die. Your late wife is still there with you in her new form, maybe more beautiful, younger, and you should be free of prejudices in order to be able to be in contact. You are in touch with her, and you are her to some extent. The question is whether you are able to be in touch with yourself. Can you be in touch with yourself and with the 5-year-old that was you? If you cannot be in touch with yourself and with the 5-year-old that was you, you cannot be in touch with her. So be in touch with yourself. And if you succeed, well, being in touch with her becomes very easy.
In many of the religions in the world today, if you become a member, if you join, if you follow their teachings, your sins are washed away, your slate is made clean. I'm going to be taking the 5 mindfulness trainings tomorrow. Any old accumulated karma, is that forgiven?
Dear Thay, dear community, our friend is aware that in a number of spiritual traditions, when someone is kind of going through an initiation to that tradition, to that practice, they're told that all of their negative actions are cleaned away, wiped away. And our friend is planning to receive the 5 mindfulness trainings tomorrow morning, and she's asking if that action will also wipe away any negative actions of her past.
When you first have the idea, when you first had the idea of taking the 5 trainings, it be already begun. You don't need until tomorrow. It has already begun. And it will continue with your practice. It is in function of your practice. You know? And it's possible to take the five mindfulness trainings by yourself alone, and with the acknowledgement, the witness of Buddha within. But here we make the commitment in the presence of the Sangha. So with the Sangha with us, we have a collective energy that is powerful enough to support us. That is why the ceremony is to help you to support your practice now and in the future. And we know that the practice of mindfulness, the practice of the five trainings, the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path has the power to transform, to heal. And that transformation and healing continues with the practice. Not only in the beginning. In the beginning there is a transformation and healing, but the practice should continue. A ceremony is just an opportunity to receive more spiritual support. A ceremony cannot do everything. It is the real practice that can transform, and not a ceremony. Why we are not caught in rituals. We are free from rituals.
Dear Thay, dear Sangha, tremendous gratitude for you and for you all. I was sitting outside, actually, and tears coming to my eyes as the 14 mindfulness trainings were being read. And I only took the five a few times. And I realized that I was taking them. I wasn't in here, but I was taking them. I felt in my mind, and I don't know, I should have been in here. But I was so moved by that. And yet my question is, and I wanted to ask you this 2 years ago, and I still have it, when I get discouraged, when I'm in my life and work and I get frustrated and discouraged, I sometimes compare myself to you. And after I've done something that I feel it's not the way to act or react to things, I feel very discouraged. And I say to myself, like immediately, Thich Nhat Hanh would not have said that. And it sometimes keeps me from, sometimes from my Sangha, from attending Sangha, and I don't feel secure in my connection with the Sangha sometimes. So in all the questions that were asked, I felt like they were my questions, and I think that if I reflect on your teachings, the answer is in there, because I've been saying to people, you cover all the bases. And so when I get that moment of discouragement, I think I know the answer already. I think I need to return to myself and to breathe.
Respected teacher, dear Sangha, our friend is describing moments in his practice when He feels very disappointed, discouraged by his own actions. And he thinks of Thay and he says to himself, Thay would not have done that thing that I just did, or would not have said the thing that I just said. And our friend becomes discouraged, and sometimes it can even prevent him from going to the Sangha. Is that right? Yeah. And so our friend is asking, how can he practice in those moments when he feels so discouraged with himself? And he already suggested that he needs to go back to himself.
When you have done something you think that you should not have done, and you realize that, that is already enlightenment. Because there are people who are doing negative things, but they do not know that they are doing negative things, and they continue always. And it's not your case. If you have done something that you don't, you are not proud of, it means that you have that kind of discernment, that kind of enlightenment, of understanding. You can discriminate against what is wholesome and what is not so wholesome. That is something very positive already. That is Buddhahood. Buddhahood in you, enlightenment in you have come out and to say that we should not do something like that. We should do the things that are more wholesome. So that is the connection that can help us to change more and more. And then in the Sangha, there are different people. And the practice of each person is different from the practice of other people. And each member of the Sangha has his strength and weakness. And the strength of one person benefits all the Sangha. And the weakness of one person is taken care of by the whole Sangha. You know? And that is why to belong to a Sangha is very important. You share your strength, and the people in the Sangha, the whole Sangha, benefit from your strength. And of course you have your weakness, and that weakness, you have the Sangha to help you to handle. And that is why to say that I should not be with the Sangha is a silly thing. We should always be with the Sangha. The Sangha will help strengthen the good things in us, and the Sangha will help us to take care of the negative things in us. And it is with the mud that we can make lotus flowers. So it is with our weakness that we can build the positive things. And let us not have any complex, because the Sangha is an opportunity.
Made a commitment based on an unclear understanding of myself. And I feel like I see the way for me to know myself better, and be true to my deepest aspirations. But I see that this might cause a lot of suffering to people around me. I feel like I can't be true to the commitment that I made because it wasn't made from a place of truth.
Dear Thay, dear community, our friend is saying that he has made a commitment based on an unclear understanding, and what he now sees was not the truth inside. And he feels that he sees the truth about himself clearly now, and that is telling him that he cannot continue to honor that commitment. But if he breaks the commitment, he sees that he will cause suffering around him. So he doesn't know what to do in that situation.
So in the life of a Sangha, we have the practice of shining light. That one person, the eyes of one person can get some, can see something, can get some insight. But compared to the Sangha eyes, the eyes of a person is not sufficient. That is why we have the practice of shining light. If you are a Sangha builder, you should know about the practice of shining light. In our Sangha, every time a novice is about to receive full ordination, the Sangha offer him a session of shining light. Everyone sit in a circle, and each of us by our observation, by our insight, tell the concerned person his strength, his weakness, and propose the path that he should follow in order to improve his practice so that he can be ready to receive the full ordination. And every time a person asks for shining light because he has some confusion, he does not know exactly where to go, he does not know how to improve his practice, the Sangha is always compassionate enough to give him or her a session of shining light. So after everyone look into the matter and express their view, their insight as about the strength and weakness of that concerned person, and what that person can do to improve his or her practice, and then that this one of us sitting there and writing down all that has been said, and make into a letter, a loving letter, whole shining light letter. And finally we give to that person. And that person is guided by the Sangha and will know what to do and what not to do. So if you have the advantage of having a Sangha, you should seek for a session of shining light, because as a good practitioner, you always take refuge in the Sangha. And the Sangha will tell you exactly you should do and you should not do. And you will be in peace, because you rely on the wisdom, the Sangha eyes, and not rely on your individual eyes anymore. And that is why in our tradition, taking refuge in the Sangha is not an expression of faith, but it is a practice. You have to really rely on the Sangha and ask the Sangha to guide you, to show you the path, because there is a Buddha in the Sangha. Don't make the decision alone.
School, we practice Budo, which we say means to stop the fight, and bringing peace to the world is sacred in our mission. I think I speak for many friends when I say that I don't just have great respect for you and the monastic community, but great affection for you too. If I had the privilege of walking with you or any monastic in this beautiful forest, and that monastic were attacked by an animal, I would stop it. I may have to kill it. If that monastic were attacked by a man, I would stop him, and I may have to kill him. And so, this is discrimination, and I have attachment to you because of my affection. I deeply want to accept the transmission of the 14 mindfulness trainings, and I have no idea how to reconcile this disparity. Thank you.
When you try to protect the planet Earth by whatever you can do, is that attachment or not? Attachment to the Earth. In Buddhism, we speak of practitioners speak also of equality, equanimity, non-discrimination. But we also speak about investment. In the Sutra of 42 chapters, it is said that to feed a good person is equal to feed five people who are not good enough. So when you feed and keep one good person alive, that person can do more good to the world than five person who are not good, you see. So there is non-discrimination, but there is also a kind of a sense of investment. You invest in the good, in the positive things, for the sake of all, including the one that seems to be the object of discrimination. When you save the life of a Buddha, and when you save a life of a sea pirate, you have the choice of saving the Buddha first. Because if you save the life of a sea pirate, you save just one life. But if you save the life of Buddha, the Buddha that you save will help to save many lives. That is a sense of investment in the Buddhist tradition. So that can be looked as discrimination, but inside that there is intelligence. Intelligence. It's like the practice of true diligence. You do not discriminate against the negative mental formation. You know that they are helpful in their own way. But you favor the good seeds, and you want the good seeds to have more chance to manifest. That is intelligence and not discrimination. And as far as action, non-violent action, compassionate action is concerned, it can never be absolute. When you go vegetarian, you have the intention to avoid killing animals for their flesh. But when you boil vegetable, there may many microorganisms dying also. So your plate of boiled vegetable is not entirely vegetarian. You see, so nothing is absolute. But eating vegetarian is more compassionate than eating the flesh of animals. So there is a degree. So when you prevent a murderer to murder, there are many ways of preventing. If you have a gun, and if you have to shoot him, you might like to shoot him in his leg rather than in his head. If you can do otherwise and not using your gun, it's better. You see, if you know Kung Fu. And then you don't have to use your gun, even if you have a gun. So a police officer is very glad to hear that he can carry his guns in mindfulness. She knows that. She hopes that she will never have to use her gun, his gun. So killing a person, one can kill with compassion, of course. But only great beings can do that. If you kill a person out of fear, out of anger, is very different. But it's always possible to avoid violence and to conduct the rescue operation in such a way that cause the least damage. Even if you are a general in the army, and if you have to conduct an military operation, you have to use guns and soldiers. But if you have compassion in your heart, your way of conducting the operation, you avoid killing innocents, civilians, and so on. So the degrees of violence and non-violence, and should be skillful and compassionate. What is important is you should have compassion and intelligence within yourself. We have one more question before we do walking meditation.
Birthday, Thai. I am a new practitioner. Thank you for showing me more deeply how to be in contact with my breath. I know that I am in the presence of a great teacher. I'm grateful for this opportunity. I grew up Catholic. I have felt Jesus in my heart. I have great understanding and ability. This moment is the most fearful moment of my life. besides growing up Catholic, I was told that you, not by name, but that you were my enemy, one of many enemies. And here I am. Please excuse me. I think the question is, how can I know absolute truth? Terrible question. I had to put words to it. But I think what I said before has a question in it. That I'm at once feeling so much like I felt when I felt Jesus in my heart. I feel that now. So reconciling.
Yeah. Yeah. So, dear Thay, dear community, our friend was brought up in a Catholic tradition and was taught that certain people were his enemy. And in this moment, he at the same time feels that he's in the presence of a great teacher. He feels as he did feel when he has been in touch with Jesus in the past. So how can he know what's really true about this?
I wrote to Martin Luther King a letter on June 1st, 1965. And exactly 1 year after that, I met him in Chicago in a press conference. In my letter to Martin Luther King, I said that man is not our enemy. No human being is our enemy. Our enemy is hate, violence, fear, discrimination, ignorance. That's true enemy. Our enemy is not man. That's the first time we attempt a dialogue with a Christian leader, a leader of the civil rights movement. That we have to agree with each other that we are not enemies to each other. The American soldiers who came to Vietnam to kill and to be killed, they are not truly enemies. The the true enemies is misunderstanding, wrong perceptions, hate, fear, anger. And in order to help a man, you have to help him or her to remove these elements from within. And I said that, well, in the peace movement in Vietnam, we have that insight that both communist and anti-communist, if they kill each other because they had ideas about happiness, about the future that is different, and it is these ideas, these convictions that have led to the killing of brothers by brothers. And I told him in the letter that in the civil rights movement, there must be, or there may be, that kind of insight that we are not struggling against other human beings. We struggle, we fight only the negative elements in man, which is discrimination, injustice, and fear. And I told him that if there are monks who burn themselves alive, that's not truly violence. Because we are caught in a war situation where the voice of people cannot be heard, even from the inside, not to say from the outside of the country. So the press, radio, television belonging to the warring parties, they don't speak our hope, our insight. So in order for the world outside to know that we did not want that war, we have to burn ourselves so that the message can get across. And burning ourselves alive like that is an act of compassion and not an act of despair or violence. And when Jesus allowed himself to be crucified as the Son of God, the Son of Man, he knew, but he accepted that. And that is not an act of despair, but of love. So there must be that kind of communion between the two communities, the two sanghas, to collaborate, because we intended to work together with his sangha, Martin Luther King's sangha. So one year later we met in Chicago, and during the meeting we talked about these kind of things. The real enemy, man, is not our enemy. We should not operate on the basis of hate, anger, but on compassion. And after that he came out against the war in Vietnam. And even people in his movement was afraid of that, did not approve of that, but he was very courageous. He has seen the truth. He got the insight that man is not our enemy. So there were American soldiers in Vietnam who had been told before they come that Buddhist monks may be guerrillas in disguise. And they should not trust the Buddhist monks. And that's why many of us were killed out of suspicion and things like that. And we know that it is ignorance, wrong perceptions are at the foundation of the act. And in order to keep that insight alive, so that compassion be maintained, we have to practice. Otherwise, you'll be carried away by anger and fear and frustration. So, we had a campaign to end the war in Vietnam. In the United States, there was the Fellowship of Reconciliation, whose headquarters is in Nyack, New York. And they sent people to Vietnam and contact us, and we collaborated with them. And we started a campaign called Stop the Killing. And we stood on that ground. Man is not our enemy. Our enemy is misunderstanding, suspicion, and so on. So if Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King can hold hands and work together, you can see that Buddha and Jesus are working together. And I have written a book with the title Coming Home, Jesus and Buddha are Brothers. So your practice should be on that line, because that insight can bring you peace, insight, happiness, and you know where to go. There is no more confusion if you have got that insight. And non-discrimination becomes something real and not just